African American music and African American history are deeply rooted in what the great novelist Ralph Ellison called the underlying impulses of African American culture, blues, gospel, and jazz. For Ellison, the terms refer not to specific forms of music, but to interrelated ways of dealing with experience. The blues confront the suffering at the center of that history and articulate isolation and despair. Rather than giving in to those feelings, though, blues artists finger the jagged grain of the brutal experience and tell their stories in voices that walk the line between despair and laughter, asserting Black humanity in a world predicated, as Martin Luther King Jr. observed, on the thingification of human beings. Craig Werner suggests we might think of the blues as it celebrates survival, but consider the jazz impulse as one imagining what might be, an impulse to assemble pieces drawn from a limitless range of traditions with new combinations of sounds implying new ways of thinking about and experiencing self-community, our relationships with each other and the larger world. That from an essay by Craig Werner in the Columbia Encyclopedia to African American History since 1939. And perhaps that's what this project does, offers new combinations of sounds implying new ways of thinking about and experiencing self-community, our relations with each other and the larger world. Mark Clegg reminds us there are infinite types of blues, beginning in the American South with Delta and Piedmont blues, but extending geographically in space, place, and time. There are honky-tonk blues, country blues, urban blues, the electric blues, Louisiana blues, Kansas City blues, Chicago blues, and West Coast blues, gospel blues and hokum blues, acid blues, blues rock, boogie-woogie, rhythm and blues, punk blues, and hip-hop. There are even blues in classical music, a symphonic form pioneered by George Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue, William Grant Still's Afro-American Symphony, and Duke Ellington's Diminuendo and Crescendo in Blue. Clegg is chief advisor to the Rachel Barton Pine Foundation's Music by Black Composers project, and he's prepared the notes for a recently released album, Rachel Barton Pine's Blues Dialogues, that explores the expressive power of blues, its history, and future directions. Rachel Barton Pine is a native of Chicago. She began violin studies at the age of 3, made her professional debut 4 years later with the Chicago String Ensemble, and gave her earliest performances with the Chicago Symphony Orchestra at age 10 and again 15. She holds prizes from many of the world's leading competitions. She won the gold medal at the 1992 quadrennial J.S. Bach International Violin Competition in Leipzig, becoming the first American and youngest ever to do so. Other top honors have come from the Queen Elizabeth, Brussels, Chrysler, Vienna, Szigeti, Budapest, and Montreal International Violin Competitions. She also won the prize for Best Interpretation of the Paganini Caprices at both the Szigeti and Paganini competitions. But we can never forget, nor can she, that she grew up with the blues in Chicago. She says, whether it was my parents' old LPs of the Siegel Schwal Band, listening to Coco Taylor, Muddy Waters, Howlin' Wolf, Buddy Guy, Paul Butterfield, and Charlie Musselwhite on WXRT's Blues Breakers radio program, going to the Chicago Blues Fest, or sneaking into Kingston Mines as an underage music enthusiast, this is my local indigenous music. We had a chance to speak by phone with Rachel Barton Pine about blues dialogues, and we began by talking about her roots in Chicago.
I'm really lucky to have been born into such an extraordinary city, and it's inspired me in, you know, countless different ways. But this album is sort of a reflection of my lifelong love of the blues as a musical genre. It's funny, it's almost something I don't mention because it's not like, you know, one of those kinds of music that I'm like, oh, I'm so excited about medieval music or heavy metal or, you know, Mahler symphonies. But it's almost like the blues is just there. It's just a part of who I am. And it's just, you know, in my blood. And you know, just feels like coming home whenever I hear that real Chicago blues sound. So it's been really exciting over the years to collect various pieces of classical music, of, you know, concert music, art music, whatever you want to call it, composed pieces for violin alone or for violin and piano that have an element of the blues in them, because I really feel like it's fun to get to indulge in that but still be playing the classical music that I love.
And that's a fascinating thing about this whole project, this album, the way that the composed music can embrace or be inspired by the blues to some extent or a great extent. And there's that wonderful clip of you online in the Blues Club Kingston Mines playing around. And it reminds us of the performing aspect of the blues. Again, Chicago blues, all those clubs and Hound Dog Taylor and the House Rockers playing away, and the oral sense of the blues in that way. What does that tension allow for? What does that allow composers to communicate, each one in his or her own right? What kinds of things have you noticed?
Yeah, well, actually, the thing that really struck me when I was putting together this particular slice of repertoire all in a clump is just the incredible variety and diversity of voices that you would think, you know, blues-inspired classical might sound like one thing, but actually every composer has a different way of approaching it, and you get just this incredible range of different voices, and that's really fun. And of course, the repertoire on the album spans nearly 100 years. The earliest piece is Clarence Cameron White, who was one of the great violin virtuosi in the first part of the 20th century, the early 20th century. And sadly, he didn't leave us any recordings. His compositions were recorded by guys like Kreisler and Heifetz, but just because of discrimination, he didn't have the opportunity to record his own music. But by all accounts, he was just a fabulous artist. And, you know, his compositions, of course, are absolutely wonderful. And then we have a piece that was written just last year for me, for this album, the Billy Childs Incident on Larpenteur Avenue. And that's an incredibly topical and moving piece inspired by the Philando Castile shooting. I almost think of Shostakovich when I think of this kind of music that's shining a light on human atrocity. And, it, you know, it's a very, you know, visceral, you know, kind of physical depiction of the circumstances with the, you know, the seven gunshots and the child in the back seat crying out and so on. But it also has a lot of emotional content, and I think it really harkens back to the tradition of the blues being used to, you know, just express very important things as well as be a source of fun.
And that means, as with all music, but particularly we might think of the blues in this way of not being able to separate the music from the social or the cultural context, that it's so much a part of what the blues is, I guess.
Yeah, and, you know, what's interesting is that, of course, on this particular album, all of the composers are Black composers. I don't want to say African-American because there's an Afro-European, and then there's a person born in Nigeria to parents of Jamaican descent. So there's Black composers from lots of places, but primarily African-American, of course. But what's interesting is that when you look at the output of composers of African descent from the last four centuries, it's actually only a small slice of it that is, you know, inspired by spirituals or blues or jazz or these days some really cool classical music that incorporates elements of hip-hop, if you can imagine that. But most music, you know, just sounds like music of its time and place. It sounds like the Romantic period, or it sounds contemporary, or it just, you know, you can't listen to it and know that it's a Black composer. So I definitely don't want to give a false impression that this is what, you know, Black classical music sounds like, because in fact it sounds like, you know, anything and everything. But for me, you know, as you said earlier, playing these particular pieces was just something very close to my heart. And I actually do play the straight up blues on the violin, you know, just jamming over the 12 bar blues chord changes and making up my own thing and doing all the slides and stuff like that. And it's almost like the kind of historic performance practice elements that we bring to earlier periods of classical music when we're going to play Baroque and we have to have certain phrase shapes and certain ornaments, or if we're going to play Mozart and it has to be more clean, or, you know, Romantic era music that has to be a bit more lush. And it can, in the case of these classical pieces inspired by the blues, I actually had to think about physically on my violin how to make certain types of slides that would capture the flavor of the style. Because if I had played too cleanly, even if I was expressive and, you know, good violin playing, so to speak, it wouldn't have quite done justice to the sound of the music. So that was really cool to get to do my blues slides in concert pieces.
I'm curious, Rachel, what about the blues, the traditional blues and violinists?
Actually, well, a friend of mine in Chicago, Edgar Gabriel, is one of the best living Chicago blues violinists, actually. And he's the one that got me up and running, actually playing the genre on my own instrument. But we have, going back historically to the early days of the acoustic blues, of course, the blues was an outgrowth of the African music that was played on bowstringed instruments in Africa, and then people came over to the New World and they started playing the Western violin or the European violin, but they still played their own African music on it, which eventually, you know, became the blues, which melded with the British Isles dances to become ultimately this hybrid that we now know as, you know, American fiddling. This Appalachian style has these two distinct parents, the African American music and then fiddle music, and then also the you know, the Scottish, Celtic, and English kind of fiddle music. But there are these wonderful field recordings that you can find online. You know, I think one of them is called Man, He Sure Do Pull Some Bow, and the other is called Fiddle Sing the Blues for Me. It's basically like early 20th century, turn of the century, you know, stuff where they would go out into the, you know, just obscure areas of the country and record these old guys in the backwoods, and these are collections specifically of African American violinists, fiddlers playing the blues on their violin, and it's a really distinctive sound. It's its own genre. Of course, the guitar eventually took over, and then the electric guitar took over. But when you go way back, the violin was right there. So that's really kind of cool. It's almost like reclaiming its heritage.
You tell a wonderful story about taking a manuscript in your hand and having it almost unplayable because it was so old, almost too fragile to put on the music stand. That's almost symbolic of the shape of what you've been discovering, that it's been like that, yes?
Yeah, well, it's like archaeological detective work, trying to gather all these pieces. And then, you know, sometimes, you know, obviously due to historic discrimination, some of these pieces were never published. Some of them are long since out of print. And so it's not just you get the music and you can now start performing it. So, you know, this is a big project to get it all into the computer and make editorial decisions and then learn it up. But it was definitely worth it because I could tell by looking at the manuscript that it was a really cool piece, which is why I decided to embark upon that journey. And then once I was able to actually play it, it turned out to be even cooler than I had hoped. So that was really, really a nice discovery. And I'm really great to be able to now share that with people. And actually, with my Music by Black Composers project of my RBP Foundation, we've collected more than 900 works by more than 350 composers from the 1700s to the present, from all around the world, Africa, Europe, South America, Caribbean, North America, even a couple from Asia and Oceania. And we've just released our first curricular volume for violin, for young violinists, that has 22 pieces by 16 different composers, and also our coloring book of 40 composers that includes their biographies and a timeline poster of 300 composers. So we're really trying to spread the word and get this music out there, because not only is it culturally important for everyone to recognize, and especially for African Americans to recognize, that they do have a place in classical music and always have, and that this isn't somebody else's music, but also it's just great music that everyone, it's sad if we don't hear it and play it, because it's just such good stuff.
One question then, Rachel, about the title of the album, Blues Dialogues. Of course, there are many senses, and you talk about Dolores White and her piece giving it the title. But what else does dialogue, or what does dialogue, in a short answer, suggest to you about this project? Why was that right?
Yeah, well, that's, you know, it's true for so much classical music that it's a conversation, sometimes a conversation among voices, in this case, a conversation among genres, really, among styles. And so, when I played Dolores's piece and, you know, loved it so much, it's like, you know, blues meets Bartok and stuff like that. And then I just thought her title was so perfect for the entire album title, because it just captured exactly what this was all about. Oh, and guess what? I just found out that for the first time ever, one of my albums is being featured in a major Hollywood film. Three tracks from my album of Vivaldi concertos for Viola d'Amore are in that movie with Emma Stone and Rachel Weisz called The Favorite.
Oh, how cool! And the movie's getting such great reviews. I'm sure our listeners have seen at least the ad.
Well, and actually, my Vivaldi is right there in the trailer also.
That just shows your range, from the Baroque to the blues.
Thank you.
Award-winning violinist Rachel Barton Pine speaking with us about her recent release on the CD label, Blues Dialogues, Music by Black Composers. She has a number of solo violin pieces, but she's also joined by pianist Matthew Hagel on this recording. And we have just heard about her foundation. We're told in the notes that the Rachel Barton Pine Foundation's Music by Black Composers project spreads awareness of and access to music by Black composers in ever-expanding ways, and places Black composers and their previously overlooked music into today's cultural consciousness. In 2018, MBC releases the first in a series of pedagogical books of music exclusively by Black classical composers, MBC Violin Volume 1, plus a coloring book, as we just heard, of 40 Black classical composers, and a timeline poster of 350 or more Black composers. MBC is also creating an online database that will provide information about works written by Black composers. The MBC website currently includes a searchable directory of living Black composers. And that is musicbyblackcomposers.org, musicbyblackcomposers.org. And you can find out more about Blues Dialogues, Music by Black Composers, featuring violinist Rachel Barton Pine and pianist Matthew Hagel, on the CEDI label. And that's CEDILLE, CEDI Records. They're based in Chicago, and it's CEDIRecords.org, CEDIRecords.org. Rachel Barton Pine has a website of her own, and it is rachelbartonpine.com, rachelbartonpine.com.